Welcome to another episode of Army Real Talk, a segment of AUSA's Army Matters podcast. I am Mzinga Curry, Director of AUSA's Education and Programs Directorate, and I am excited about welcoming my new co-host, Lieutenant Colonel Brittany Woods, AUSA's new U.S. Army Fellow. Lieutenant Colonel Woods, since this is your first podcast with Army Real Talk, why don't you share a little bit about yourself to our listening audience?
Thank you, Mrs. Curry. I'm honored to be here and a member of the AUSA team. I grew up in an Army family and currently call Kentucky home. Following in my father's footsteps, I commissioned as a military police officer and have been stationed across the globe, much like many of my peers. With my most recent assignment being in the Republic of Korea with the United States Forces Command, it's definitely good to be home. I'm looking forward to today's podcast with special guest Major General Retired Malcolm Frost, discussing Army recruiting and training within this COVID-19 environment. Welcome, General Frost.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's good to be here, Colonel Woods.
Yes, welcome, General Frost. Listeners, we have a nice treat for you today. I am not sure if you are aware, but Major General Retired Malcolm Frost is a communications, media relations, and leader development executive with over 30 years of experience providing large-scale strategic and operational leadership and oversight in the Indo-Asia Pacific, Middle East, Europe, and the United States for the United States Army. Successfully leading the evolution of soldier training programs in peace and war, from platoons through two-star command levels. He is currently a senior advisor for K Global. Sir, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. And I would ask that you would share a little bit about what you do with K Global, as well as share any Army highlights.
You know, after a 31-year career, you know, I transitioned out and I started up my own business. And part of that is doing everything from being a strategic advisor to different corporations, you know, Fortune 500 corporations, doing leader development and also corporate consulting, as well as keynote speaking. And one of the companies I work for is K Global. They're a public relations and communications firm downtown in D.C., and they do federal, commercial, and even state government work. And some of their clients that I work with as well and who they support include Sparta Science, and there's another company that I work with called BeaverFit, and those are both in the holistic health and fitness realm, which is obviously something that's near and dear to my heart. It was an initiative that I was a part of to include the Army Combat Fitness Test in my last job at the Center for Initial Military Training. So excited to be here and talk about them and talk about holistic health and fitness and how the Army Combat Fitness Test is working out for the Army and the future of the United States Army.
Perfect, sir. So let's go ahead and jump into the questions. And I do ask that you provide some background of the development of the new Army Combat Fitness Test, as well as the Holistic Health Fitness Program.
Absolutely. So here's the bottom line. The United States Army and all of DOD, Department of Defense, quite frankly, I think has neglected about 30 years of health and fitness science. Traditionally, commanders are the ones who determine what physical training should be. And unlike almost every other type of expertise, the commanders are not the experts. They usually have experts that help to tell them what to do and help to advise them and develop the technical and the tactical aspects of that training. And commanders, quite frankly, are probably the worst ones, because what they would do is they do physical training based on what they're good at or what they think should be done. They aren't health experts, they aren't medical experts, and they aren't fitness experts. And I think what's happened is over the last 30 years, we have been doing physical training, and training has been oriented towards the old test. And the old test was the Army Physical Fitness Test, which was 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes of sit-ups, and a two-mile run. And so what we did is, as we developed this test, which is easy to do, but it hadn't changed in almost 40 years. And what we have found out over the last really decade, 15 years, even 20 years, is that through the rigors of combat, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and not just that, but looking at the wear task battle drills, is that that test was not an accurate depiction of the components of physical fitness that are necessary to do our job as soldiers, both in combat and to execute our wear task and battle drills. So just to back up for a second, the Holistic Health and Fitness Program was developed with the understanding that, hey, there are five huge components or pillars that we need to have as we move forward. And those pillars are physical fitness, physical readiness, mental readiness, spiritual readiness, performance, nutrition, and sleep hygiene. So those five pillars were built. And why were they built? And I'd kind of ask this rhetorical question. What's the most important weapon system in the United States Army? I think anybody you ask that to is going to say the soldier. Well, here's the problem. What assets and resources do we put towards the most important weapon system in the United States Army? If you look at the M4 rifle all the way to the M1 tank, we put billions of dollars into parts, into supplies, into the equipment itself, into training areas and training ranges and personnel to be able to support those systems and do preventive maintenance of those systems, et cetera. What do we have for the United States Army soldier in the last 30 years? I would argue we basically have two things that it boils down to. We have outdated morale, welfare, and recreation gymnasiums that were not built for soldiers. And we have centralized medical treatment facilities. We do not have down at the tactical level, like we do with every other piece of equipment, we do not have the health and the fitness expertise and professionals and equipment and supplies and facilities to support the most important weapon system in the United States Army, the soldier. That's why we built the Holistic Health and Fitness Program. And that's why we changed the fitness test to the Army Combat Fitness Test. Why did we do that? And why did we start off with the ACFT first? Well, the bottom line is, if you're going to drive a culture change across the Army and get fitness in line the way it should be, you have to change the culture. You change the test to change the culture. And that test was rigorously studied and researched for a couple of years. And we've been trying to change it for 10 years. And that test is built off of the 11 components of fitness that are necessary to do your job as a soldier in combat. And we regressed those physical tasks, basic tasks, because the old test was just muscular endurance and cardiovascular endurance. This test tests the other aspects which soldiers must execute to do their job, both in combat or in a high threat area. They include muscular strength. They include, agility and flexibility and balance and reaction time and all of these other aspects and components of physical readiness. And so that's why the test was developed, because it's a better predictor of what you must be physically fit to do your job, and because we needed to change the culture of fitness, wake people up, and move down this path. And there's another reason why this is tremendously important. I know I'm talking about this a lot here, but the other reason is we had as high as 17% non-deployables in the United States Army at our high watermark. I think it's hopefully down to about 11 or 12 now percent, which is good. But if you think about this, if you're at 17% non-deployable, that means that if you're a 9-man squad or a 9-soldier squad, you're sitting there fielding 7 of your 9 personnel. That's just not acceptable in the battlefields of the future. We have to have a 90 plus, hopefully close to 100% deployable rate. And why were we non-deployable? We were non-deployable at those high rates because of lack of fitness, lack of health, medical problems, and musculoskeletal injuries. And so let's look at this from the taxpayer side. The taxpayer side and the Army side of what they have to pay is about $500 million a year in musculoskeletal injuries alone. Medically, we were paying $1.6 to $1.9 billion with a B dollars a year based on all of the medical problems that we have with soldiers in the United States Army. And the vast majority of these emanate from poor health, poor fitness in a test and physical readiness programs, and not just physical, but even mental and beyond programs that were not built for the soldier to prepare them for the rigors of their job. That's why the Holistic Health and Fitness Program and the Army Combat Fitness Test are so important to the United States Army. It's about readiness. It's about readiness to do our job on behalf of the nation.
Sir, I love your passion, and it really sounds like the 5 pillars, the new test, really focuses on the total soldier. So thank you for that.
The updated ACFT 2.0 introduces a modification to the leg tuck as a bridging exercise, accounting for the impacts of the pandemic and soldiers' ability to train on the 6-event test. How do these types of adaptations help improve soldier fitness while also protecting the force with COVID mitigation measures?
Well, yes. So first off, the leg tuck and having the modification to the leg tuck, which is a plank exercise, I think is positive for a couple of reasons. First off, the leg tuck, there were a lot of soldiers as we adapt to this new test. We're having a tough time with the leg tuck, but it also allows for, by having a leg tuck option or the plank option, it gives soldiers the option to test their muscular strength in their midsection, right, which is their core, and their ability for their core to be strong, which is important when you think about lower back, hips, and what we have to do to carry soldiers' load. And what the plank does that the leg tuck doesn't do is the plank doesn't require you to be on an apparatus. And so if you think about it through a COVID landscape, the less things that you have to touch, the better. But I would tell you that this test can be trained for without having to touch a piece of equipment. The Center for Initial Military Training has put out an Army Combat Fitness test handbook on how to train, and it has multiple examples of all of the six events that can be done with just body weight without having to put your hand on an apparatus or a piece of equipment that you may or may not have at home or that maybe at the gym and you don't want to go there because of the potential for contact with COVID. And so I think that there are many, many ways that both the modifications and the training exercises that have been put out by the Center for Initial Military Training will help soldiers be able to prepare for this test, even in a COVID environment. From my standpoint, it's really about carving the time, using your imagination, understanding where those resources are, and being able to do those body weight exercises to help you be prepared for the ACFT 2.0.
Perfect. So my next question is, how does the initial entry training, formerly known as basic training, facilitate building the health and fitness required for new recruits? So I'm asking in general, but I'm also looking specifically about those who have not experienced physical activity or have not had a healthy lifestyle as far as eating in the past. How does that help them?
Oh, boy, you've hit on a major topic. So I'm going to talk about this in a few different ways. First off, one of the challenges we have with just in the United States of America is health and fitness. That's why only 29% of young recruits aged 17 to 24 can even qualify to serve in the United States military, much less the Army. And so what ends up happening is we get too many young recruits that are out of shape. We have very few gyms, very few physical education in schools now. We don't push nutrition like we should on the outside. We have food swamps and food deserts that are out there in America. So people come in obese or they don't have the musculoskeletal densities. They come in to basic training and they just don't have the background of being active, being involved with sports and other community activities that allow them to kind of prepare their bodies, not just their bodies, but their mind for the rigors of basic training. And that's why we have such a low pool that's even eligible to serve and can qualify to serve. So when we do bring them into basic training, even with those that can qualify, many of them, it is still a shock. It's a shock to their mind. It's a shock to their body. And it's a shock to their system. And so unfortunately, we have anywhere from 10 to 12% that wash out of basic training for medical issues or for physical issues or for musculoskeletal issues. And it's just very, very difficult, near impossible in 10 weeks to change your body and to lose that weight and to get in the musculoskeletal density that's necessary for you to be able to pump a rucksack and to move long distances and to go over obstacles and do the basic things we have to do as soldiers. And so basic training has really tried to move to the left of that boom, and with the recruiters now. And so how do we, with recruiters, try and select and screen better so that we have basic trainees that come in that will attrit at a lower rate and are more apt to become soldiers that are successful in their first duty assignment for 3 years? And we have to reduce that overall attrition. It's a difficult problem set, especially given the product that we're getting from America, which is, not as healthy, not as fit, and doesn't eat as well. So one of the things that we did was implemented the occupational physical assessment test, which is an assessment physical test that's been in the system for about 3 years to try and better understand who could qualify and prepare them for basic training in the new Army combat fitness test. And it's in line with the holistic health and fitness program that I talked about earlier. But there's other ways that we can do this because, taking a test is one measure, but tests are few and far between, whether it's the OPAT or the Army, the ACFT. And so I think we have to leverage technology to really get after this. And that's why I'm so incredibly excited to be aligned with Sparta Science. So what they do is they take force plate machine learning, millions of data points, and they're in professional sports, they're in colleges, universities, they're in the health industry. And now they are getting into the federal space as well, where you can, every week or every 10 days, you can do a quick assessment of somebody and look at their ability to load, explode, and drive. And looking at their joints and their musculoskeletal density and be able to predict injury, be able to help them prevent injury, and then understand where their weaknesses and their strengths are physically just by stepping on a scale and doing a couple of quick exercises in 5 minutes. And that gives you an objective assessment on somebody, not just an objective assessment that can be done at speed and scale for the United States Army, which is huge. You can't, you have to have something you can put hundreds and thousands of soldiers through very quickly, which this does. And not just that, it gives you an accountability measure to be able to hold those soldiers to account on what they need to do to improve. It allows you to orient a specific training program for them to improve their weaknesses. It helps you to see how they're doing rehabilitation to get it done faster. And frankly, as you look at the long run, you can now track a soldier from recruit through basic training through their entire career. and have a good snapshot of them understanding who they are. And it allows you to measure the effectiveness of their physical readiness programs. And it's an objective measurement tool. So as we spend all this money on the new fitness test, which, you know, costs anywhere between, about $65 to $70 million, sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but that's less than a pair of sneakers for every soldier in the United States Army. It's far less than the $500 million we have to spend on musculoskeletal or the $1.9 billion. So this is an investment. And so we need to invest in technologies that are out there, like these force plate machine learning that Sparta Science does, to be able to give objective assessments, hold soldiers to account, and can be done at the speed and scale of the United States Army. And I could see every recruiter across the 1,500 or so, I know it's going down to probably 1,200 recruiters, recruiting stations out there, putting one of these in the trunk of their car and going around to where recruits are, and be able to quickly measure and assess whether or not somebody has the capacity to be able to be a soldier based on their physical readiness. That's probably even better than the occupational physical assessment test, or is it done in conjunction with the occupational physical assessment test? Because we've got to be able to grow them now and help them train and hopefully give them programs and things to think about as recruits to better prepare them before they enter basic training, so they could succeed in basic training through those rigors physically and then become successful soldiers and reduce that attrition rate. So there's a lot of things that we can do out there, and we need to just understand what the commercial market has, understand technology, take advantage of things like AI and machine learning to give us a better assessment, and use technology to be able to get after this problem set that we're talking about.
Sir, you just talked about some of the ways that technology can assist with assisting soldiers in preparing and identifying health issues. As you know, health and fitness is paramount in the COVID fight. Can you please share some insights on how we might increase the health of our current soldiers during this time?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've talked about a lot is physical fitness. I really think as we're looking at COVID, we need to continue to focus on nutrition. Nutrition is just a massive challenge. It's a massive challenge for our nation. I mean, we have food inequality, we have lack of nutrition, we have lack of access to school lunches, lack of access to good, healthy meals. We have too many fast food opportunities that are out there and too many processed foods. And so, again, this is an American problem, not just an Army problem. And so I'm also involved with an organization called Mission Readiness that is a nonprofit for the Council for a Stronger America that looks at this as a national security problem about nutrition and the lack of, you know, the food inequality and the inability to have healthy eating habits across our nation and access to food. And so I think nutrition is a way in which you really need to look at COVID now. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to all look at our eating habits. And I think the Army needs to look at, and AFES, the Army and Air Force Exchange System, has to look at the food choices that we give soldiers during this time. The Go for Green program in our dining facilities, I think we need to continue to push that for healthy eating choices. We have to get rid of the fast food establishments. I don't probably need to name them, but the Taco Bells and the McDonald's and the Burger Kings and the pizza joints. And we need to get into healthy restaurants and healthy food choices, even if AFES or Department of Defense needs to subsidize some of those because they may cost more, to be able to allow the cost to not go up for the individual soldier. Then we need to do that, to give those healthy eating choices and change the habit. Now, during COVID, you know, it's pretty difficult, meaning, you know, if you're on your own and if you're not doing activities, it takes a lot of self-start to be able to stay fit. But this is where technology, once again, as you kind of alluded to, can assist us. There are tremendous companies out there that have app-based physical training programs that you can do in your home. They're free. You can get them on the App Store. There are ones that are endorsed by the United States Army, I believe, to be able to get after the physical training that you need to do to be able to prepare yourself as part of the H2F, Holistic Health and Fitness Program, and the Combat Fitness Test. There are ones that allow you to cope and allow you to remain mentally resilient, because that's a difficult thing right now. And so we need to access those types of programs. And I think the Army has to really look at this as well and understand that, you know, a lot of soldiers spend a lot of time on that 7-inch by 3-inch device that's in their hand, which is a mini computer. And how do we look at mental health, mental readiness? How do we give them access to understanding nutritional habits and good nutrition choices, and then physical readiness and training programs that can be done in an app-based program with innovative training models, et cetera, and maybe even access to online fitness trainers? You know, right now the Army is going through the proposal process, requesting proposals for athletic trainers and strength and conditioning coaches that we will push down to the brigade level in 9 locations. I think there's going to be about 500 of them in the first tranche. And that's part of the H2F program as well. That's getting the health and fitness professionals down to the tactical level. Registered dietitians, getting physical therapists, in this case, the strength and conditioning coaches and the athletic trainers, the request for proposals for mainstream commercial America to come and bring folks to do that and be down to tactical level is out. Well, when they come in, they can develop programs for the soldiers to be able to do on their own time and that is tailored in accordance with what that individual soldier needs to do. So, and there's a way to do technological-based assessments as well. I talked about Sparta Science. That's something where even in a COVID environment, you can bring a soldier in once a week if you're in an environment where you can't come together and have them step on that scale for 5 minutes. And you'll be able to quickly know, are they accessing the app and are they executing the physical training they're supposed to do that they've been told to do? And so there's just ways to take advantage of technology. It just takes imagination and it takes leadership and it takes accountability.
Excellent. Excellent. So, sir, I'm going to change lanes just a bit as I saw that the U.S. Army had its first virtual Army National Hiring Day event. So that was about a month ago, which is truly a testament of the Army's flexibility as well as innovation in a COVID environment. I honestly see the opportunities as well as challenges in a virtual environment, but I would like to hear from you. Can you provide a few recommendations on creating realistic and sustainable prerequisites from bringing in the right personnel?
Yeah, so there's a few things I'd like to talk about. First off, and this is going to be a little shot across the bow from my experience with the Department of Defense and the MEP sites, the sites where you have to come in and do your medical screening, et cetera. So one of the things I think we need to do is we need to overhaul our system for how we screen recruits to come in. I have personally gotten involved with half a dozen young individuals who at one point in time may have had an issue. So here's the deal. When I came in the United States Army and I got my medical screening, they looked at my medical records and I got medically screened. If I needed a waiver, I got it. And you'd go through the military entry processing station, MEPS, and you'd be good to go. So today we are screening out so many young Americans, I think, that have things that we never would have known before. We keep diagnosing folks with ADHD and with this disorder and that disorder. There are more disorders out there that I think a lot of us have had at one point in time. We were just never diagnosed. And those things now, if you had it at 10 or 11 or 12 or 13 or 14, are now disqualifiers or are getting screened out. And we're allowing too much leeway, I think, to some of the doctors at the MEP stations to be able to medically disqualify folks. Until leadership gets involved, there's way too much bureaucracy and way too many hands in the pie. And we are screening out in an already, you know, low pool environment where we have few people who want to serve, much less can qualify to serve. And we're screening too many out. I would call on the Department of Defense to overhaul the entire military entry processing system that we have. It's archaic, it's bureaucratic, too many hands, too many opinions involved. And we haven't looked at the standards through the lens of what's realistic in today's society and for what can qualify. That's number one. Number two is I applaud what General Muth and U.S. Army Recruiting Command has done looking at this new environment to try and recruit young Americans to become soldiers. They're going to where those young kids, those young men and women, where they reside. And that's in the virtual space. It's through the gaming, online gaming. We have an Army gaming team. We have a physical Army physical fitness team now. And so by going and doing things online, which is where they congregate, is the way to go. Those young Americans aren't walking up to the strip malls of America, which are dying anyway, to knock on a recruiting center door to be able to talk to a recruiter. So we have to go to where they are. And in the COVID environment, I think this is the perfect opportunity because there are so many people, so many parents, so many employers, and so many young kids that are now even living online more to connect, to be able to use that medium to connect with them. And that's why this Army National Hiring Days that went virtual, I think, is a fantastic way to go. It needs to be routinized. We need to standardize this and figure out the lessons learned and then go forth and continue to do it. So just a few things that I think to create realistic and sustainable prereqs, you know, that's a way to do it. I think by using some of the machine learning technology to be able to understand whether somebody is physically fit and be able to better put together standards that are more realistic on the prerequisites so that we do get the right personnel. And more importantly, we don't green out personnel. And frankly, there are ways that we're trying to develop, which are both a combination of kind of mental, physical, and personality-based tests that I know the Army is studying to try and look at the propensity of somebody to not attrit and to commit themselves and to be able to make it through at least the first duty assignment. And so there's a lot of effort in the talent management realm that's going on to develop capabilities along that line as well. So, you know, I kind of applaud the Army for where it's going. I think we still have a lot of work to do, but we can get there. And again, I really think that we need to totally not scrap, but we sure need to rehabilitate the entire military entry processing system, bureaucracy, and the way in which we screen folks to get into the military.
Sir, I so agree with you. And for one of your points, labeling, I believe it directs the mindset of a child. So I love hearing your points. And as you stated, you know, virtual recruiting is part of today's culture. So I give kudos to the Army for taking advantage of the technology that we have at hand. So we're coming down to an end, and I would love to know if there's anything that we haven't covered that you would like to share with our listening audience.
Well, what I'd like the audience to know is that we put together the Holistic Health and Fitness System or program a couple of years ago, and it's those five pillars. We obviously got the Army Combat Fitness Team approved. And now what you're seeing is my successor, Major General Lonnie Hibbard, and others who are actually implementing those programs, who are getting the funding for those programs, and you're starting to see things roll out. What you need to know is this is a long game. You know, it's going to take us 5 years just to get the medical and the health professionals down to the tactical level in the United States Army. You know, those registered dietitians and physical therapists, strength and conditioning coaches, athletic trainers, cognitive therapists, right where the soldier lives. And so it's going to take us time to develop those programs and get those folks and hire them and get them down into units, down to the brigade level, because there's 1,500 brigades in the Army. It's going to take a lot of time to do that. You know, you're seeing the fitness lanes have come out, and finally they're at all the units and have been delivered, I think, almost to every unit in the United States Army to be able to train and see the Army Combat Fitness Test. And now they have time, at least, I think, a year, 18 months now, to be able to train towards that test and get and prepare for it. And preparing for that test is fine because you're training on the components of fitness that are necessary. I would also let folks know that, you know, the Army is also looking at the equipment. So I look at great companies that are out there that are primed and are ready to put world-class soldier, tactical athlete fitness systems into our gymnasiums, or what we're going to call them and are calling them, which are soldier performance readiness centers. And right now there's also proposals out there for companies to build these soldier performance readiness centers down to the brigade level. They're outfit with all of the capacity, you know, with these world-class, what you might see in a Division I university or at a pro training camp. You're going to see those systems that are modified for tactical athletes and have other things like rope climbs and obstacles, things that our soldiers need to be able to train on, but also just those world-class soldier kind of fitness performance center and what I would call all of the apparatus, all the plates, and all of the gym equipment, classic gym equipment, but in a readiness center. You're going to see those start to roll out as well. And those performance readiness centers, which will become training areas and training ranges for the human body and mind. You're going to have your physical therapists. You're going to have a recovery section. You're going to have a warm-up section. You know, you're going to have a place where you can kind of cool down, where you can get physical therapy. You're going to have those professionals there. It's going to take us time to roll this across the Army, but the United States Army leadership is committed to this and is putting the funding towards it in the Future Years Defense Plan, which is the next 5 years of funds. And so just know that your Army is investing in you as soldiers. It's going to take us time, but not just soldiers, but soldier athletes. That's why I'm excited on the outside to be able to do all I can do to help, which is do things like communicate to you here at AUSA. It's being a part of great companies like K Global that are teamed with companies like Sparta Science on the force plate machine learning. I look at companies like BeaverFit that's out of Reno. They have 80% veterans, and they are committed to building world-class fitness equipment and soldier performance readiness centers. They're the ones who have fielded half of the Army Combat Fitness Train lanes that you see, the equipment for those lanes. And they have world-class capacity and capability and will be hopefully part of the team that's building these soldier performance readiness centers. They sure want to do it, and they're ready and supporting units. They're the ones that have the containers that you see across a lot of divisions in the Army to be able to house this equipment. And they build the containers, they bring the equipment, and they personalize it, they modify it, they make it professional, and they will put exactly, you know, because every installation, every post, every unit is different in their needs. And so when you look at what a company commander, troop or battery commander needs, what a battalion commander needs, or a squadron commander, what a brigade commander needs, we have to have solutions on the containering, on the equipping side, on the facility side, and then on the training side for each of those levels to be able to access the right equipment and the right capabilities across health and fitness in the United States Army. And so I'm really just excited about the future for the Army. This is going to be a transformation. While it is about soldiers today, I was a soldier and I had to modify my training for this. It's really about readiness of the force 10, 20, and 30 years from now. It's about that young recruit that comes in today that is more ready, more healthy, more fit, more deployable at 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years. And then when they retire, you know, they're not like me. They're not somebody who has to go to the VA. They're not somebody who's had 9 surgeries from shoulder to back to legs because I didn't train properly. And I like to think I'm a healthy guy and a fit guy. I did not train properly throughout my career that allowed me to prevent those injuries, rehabilitate faster, and be more ready and more physically fit. And it's not just about the physical. It's also the mental and the nutrition. And eventually we need to get after better sleeping habits as well. And so the Army is committed to this. It's an exciting time. There are companies in corporate America that are chomping at the bit to help the Army get here and to get past this neglect of not looking at all of the technology, science, and, you know, quite frankly, knowledge that has been gained in the last 30 years. And they're ready to help the United States Army get to where it wants to be. Exciting to see the Army leadership committed to it. And I can't wait to see what happens next and do what I can to help from the outside. So thank you so much for allowing me to join you and kind of share my thoughts.
Sir, thank you. I am also excited about seeing the way ahead. And I thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your continued service. And thank you for what you did within the Army and what you continue to do outside of the Army. Thank you, General Frost.
Well, thanks. My best to the Association of United States Army and everyone that supports AUSA and supports the U.S. Army. Hua.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Monday with a brand new episode of Army Matters with Army Real Talk. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hua.